extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. From the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, Taquito, or General Sow, I can never tell, I don't know which one it is, but in the background, our feline friend. Big show coming up, huge show, CCL review, a huge two-legged series win for the New England Revolution, who didn't have to play a single game in doing so. Tati fuels NYCFC's victory. Montreal experiences free space. It was inevitable. And we're going through three more teams today as our season previews wrap up. Inter Miami, complete with an interview with Chris Henderson as he rebuilds this squad just 2 years after expansion. We'll also talk Toronto FC. Bob's going to play the kids, we think, or maybe he has to. And Charlotte FC, are they screwed? Are they not screwed? Is it somewhere in between? We will discuss that and then rank our top five number nines. And we start this show with a headline, breaking news. It turns out David Goss is not a man of the people. I repeat, not a man of the people. He is of the upper crust. He looks down his nose at the NYCFC Forever podcast. I heard a story the other night, Dave, and you're looking all incredulous at me. Let me jog your memory real quick. You were in the Rockaways. You were at a grocery store. An enterprising podcaster came up to you. Dave came up and said, will you be on the show? You were jacked. You were all about it. You were doing your New York thing. But then you never came on. You ghosted the New York City Forever podcast. I don't know, man. They said you ghosted them.
How could I ghost something I wasn't invited to?
He said that you ghosted them. That's all I know. It's too this alternate history from you right now.
I'd like to see some sources here. It sounds like you're reporting based off nothing.
No, my sources. Sources are the NYCFC Forever podcast.
So that sounds like a delightful chat with. And it sounds like you are not a proper reporter in this scenario.
I don't know. This sounds like Rashomon. Really, it's like this one thing happens, and it's just like one point of view perspective on what happened, and then another. And like, we'll probably never get to the truth. But I do agree with the overall sentiment from whatever that podcast is that you are clearly not a man of the people.
How do you respond? This is your opportunity. You're at the dais. There's an accusation that has been leveled against you, David Goss, who many people would say are closest to the people among the folks on this show.
So what I would say is on this show, which obviously I hold so dear to my heart, you've got Andrew Wiebe, who will say anything to anyone to be brought closer to them. So Wiebe is attempting to be a fan of every team. And you've got Doyle, who will say anything to anyone for them to hate him. And Doyle's an enemy of all teams. So therefore, my number one responsibility as part of this show is to remain neutral. And I can't be a part of team-specific pods.
You're a chaotic neutral. Man. You're definitely a chaotic neutral. I'm a good neutral.
No, Gasman is like lawful neutral. Like there's nothing chaotic about him at all. He's just playing it straight down the middle every single time.
Straight down the middle. Yeah. Right down the middle. All right. Well, you know what? We'll let the NYCFC Forever folks respond. I had a great time chatting with them. It was really, you know, Jonathan Sanchez, who's gotten more airtime in this show than he deserves. And shout out to you, Jonathan. You're still the man. Has been in my mentions, as we know, for a long time. Finally did it. I really enjoyed it. By the way, you see right now, if you're watching on YouTube, that we are wearing the new kits that came out, at least Doyle and I got this new LA Galaxy with the sweet collar. Really love the collar design on this right here with the Galaxy, with the Quasars. Really enjoy this. We'll go straight on the shrine over here to my right when we're done. And this is the first time I've ever seen Doyle in a MLS jersey. How do you feel, Doyle?
Pretty fit. I think I'm going to hit the gym after this. I will say that these are maybe more flattering on professional athletes than they are on middle-aged guys who were trying to lose that last 15 pounds. But all in all, I'm not too displeased. You know, it's good motivation ahead of bikini season. This is really good motivation.
The Sounders checkerboard really like slims you down. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, nobody's going to look at the love handles when you got that going right down the middle of the shirt.
I'm glad the checkerboard is doing that because nothing else I have tried has actually slimmed me down. So
I just love the Doyle classic hat with the beard. You look like a Sounders fan. You look like you are playing a song right now.
Fight and win.
Oh my god. Oh boy, I did not see that coming. That's good. MLSstore.com for all the new kits. And if you'd like to cosplay as a Sounders fan, just go pick up a Pageboy hat and
oh, I gotta get an IPA. I'll be right back.
Yeah, exactly. the hoppier, the better. Look, if you haven't already checked the feed, you may have seen it, may have got the alert or whatever. We had a nice sit down with Josie Altidore that came out this week. Really fun. He opened up, talked about all manner of things, whether it be the move to the Revs, what he was looking for in his next club, whether or not he wants to be on that World Cup team, whether he dreams about that. Whether he can play on turf, like, that's a big question that he doesn't seem too concerned about. We'll see about that in practice. The marriage to Sloan and how his life has changed in the last couple years, what went wrong in Toronto, and what the hell went down in that tunnel in 2017 against the Red Bulls. So go check that out. We'll try to do more of those interviews. If you have somebody you want us to talk to, hit us up, 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com, or hit us up on Twitter at extratime. Yeah, let's see. CCL first or MLS news first? Choose your adventure, guys. Where you want to go?
Let's start with CCL.
Okay. Revs, look, I sort of teased it already. Cavalli, unfortunately, really a bummer. Not able to get the visa process done. With help from the Revs, with help from the Federation, it just didn't happen. We live in weird times, I guess. So the Revs move right along. They don't even have to play a game. There's no warm-up for them. They're straight onto the quarterfinals. NYCFC, though, Doyle, was it a statement that they made? I mean, they went down to Costa Rica, went to San Jose. Santos, their stadium is not approved to be played in, so they played 3 hours down the road. 2-0 win, Tati times two. That's the way you draw it up.
Yeah, in a lot of ways it was, right? Because it's a smaller Costa Rican team. Like, this Santos de Guapiles, I'm probably not pronouncing that right. Like, this is not Alajuelense, this is not Herediano. Like, they had it just kind of just happy to be here kind of vibe. And NYCFC took care of business. They did it despite missing a couple of starters, despite a red card, despite some slop in midfield and playing out of the back. Like, it very much looked like their first game of the year. But they went down to Costa Rica and they handled a Costa Rican team with ease. And yes, it's a smaller Costa Rican team. There are asterisks to throw on this if you want that. That said, MLS teams don't traditionally do that. You know, and even Liga MX teams struggle in these situations. Like, Cruz Azul only beat Forge 1-0. You know, so, like, this is a...
Pumas drew with Saprissa.
Right. So, it's obviously, I think Forge is a measure smaller than this Costa Rican team, and Saprissa is probably a measure or two bigger. But, like, it gives you an idea of what it is to get results on the road in CCL. And for NYCFC to post a 2-0 that could have been 4 if the woodwork wasn't so weirdly unkind, it gives you an idea of what this team can do. And I think if you're an NYCFC fan, you should probably come out of that happy with just about everything except the red card.
And the
bunch of reporting, by the way, on Tati, that River Plate put in a final bid and NYC said no. I think the bid reported was $11.5 million. ESPN's reporting this for 50% of his rights. And the report was NYCFC said, well, it's got to be 13.5 or nothing. But anyway, it seems like he's going to sign a new contract reportedly. And then they're going to look to the summer. Yep. So this is a good start.
Didn't
for
he
him.
Signed a new not contract last year?
I don't know. If they want to keep him, I guess. But when you have this interest like this and, you know, he's got to say no to River Plate, I guess he's going to say, show me the money. And I get that.
Does he become a DP if he signs another new contract?
I feel like is he already a DP?
No.
He's not already a DP. I'm sure this new contract would be DP. He's obviously DP caliber.
Yeah.
There's no downside here for NYCFC to pay him out like one of the best players in the league, which is what he is. Keep him happy for this year. Keep him happy for this CCL run. Maybe you end up making... the Club World Cup, which would be amazing. That's one. And two is, if you have him happy and making $3 million a year and bagging goals in MLS on a long-term contract, that means this summer you don't say $13.5 million for 50%. You say, give me $25 million for 75%. You have that kind of leverage. So it's, you know, I have no problem with this. Like, this is exactly what they should be doing. Tati is worth the money. He showed it again the other night. Like, this is not a complicated thing.
I also want to just throw it out there, and if you haven't gone and read Tom Bogert's pieces on both conferences, breaking down DP spots availability in those, then U22 usage, you should go do that. I literally just went over to the site and then pulled that up so I could jog my memory here. NYCFC has three U22 players. Doesn't matter if they move Tati up to DP status because they have Tyus Magno on a young DP deal within that. I think both, certainly Maxi, who's also technically a DP right now, are a question mark. He's tamable. So that would allow you then to move Tati up. You would have to do some different things, I would assume, with the cap situation to get you to compliance if you don't have the salary, the room already. But it would seem like they do have the flexibility should they want to
do that. While you were doing that, I researched, spent a ton of time on the scenario in which Melbourne City wins the Asian Champions League, NYCFC wins CCL, Manchester City wins Champions League. What does FIFA do? Is this Open Cup rules where you can't play a team you own?
I don't know. Didn't Yokohama Marinos, isn't that where Thiago Martins came from? And isn't that a city?
Yeah, they are, but I don't think they're in.
They don't have an opportunity to qualify. Yeah, I don't know.
Don't they? Doesn't Man City have a Uruguayan club?
Oh, I'm wrong. Yokohama is in Champions League as well.
Yeah. Oh, let's go.
They do have a Uruguayan team.
CFG, Club World Cup. Just get them all involved, baby. We're all going. That's the way it works. How about Forge? You want to talk Forge, Dave, or do you want to talk Montreal? Or both?
We can talk both. I thought Montreal... Obviously, they get the goal early. It's like super exciting. And then VAR
kind of got the goal
correctly used.
Yeah. Unfortunately, so
it is very early in the play.
Yeah, but it is where they win the ball to go the other way. And like he didn't get the ball. He kicked the dude's leg out, and it was I don't know.
But otherwise, there was a few moments of scramble for Montreal. One of them comes off a slip from Joel Waterman, which I don't think there's any blame there. Otherwise, I think you saw a pretty compact, a pretty comfortable Montreal team on the road. 1-0 doesn't end the tie for you, although it's heartbreaking and it's classic CCL in every way it happens. Of your best defender gets magged in the dying moments, and then an oddly deflected cross gets headed in at the near post. All that's brutal, but you're looking at a Montreal team that didn't have a ton of depth in this game. There were not a lot of options off the bench for them. They're playing a winger at one fullback and then converted fullback on the other side. So this was, I thought, a strong performance from Montreal to just show at this stage in preseason that they were capable of playing at that level. And then on the flip side for Forge, really unfortunate goal to give up, but you guys mentioned it. They lose 1-0 to the second best team that right now in Mexico and reigning champions for a team that's never been on this stage before with a lot of new pieces. That's also in preseason. I thought that was a pretty good performance for them as well.
León 2-0 winners against Guastatoya. Pumas and Saprissa, we mentioned there, 2-2. Crazy game, good game between those two. Christian Bolaños, 2 goals, just throwing it back. What year is it? No idea. Christian Bolaños scoring goals for Saprissa and CCL. Two more games to go in the first leg of the round of 16. Those are both tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, Comunicaciones and the Rapids, and then Motagua and Seattle Sounders at 9 p.m. Eastern. We won't obviously talk too much about those, but those are big games for MLS clubs to try to get through.
What are acceptable results in those games? Both the MLS teams are on the road. What do you guys think are acceptable results?
Win, I think, personally. I think we should be at the point where the expectation, certainly for the Sounders, is to win. And I think given what Colorado did last year, I think it should be win, but probably if we're saying truly acceptable, like you're not going to get upset about it. It's not great. It's not bad. It's somewhere in between. Like, yeah, I mean, draws with away goals.
Yeah, goal scoring tie.
Yeah.
Would be the key for both of them to just be in the driver's seat coming back. And yeah, as long as you win the tie, I don't really care about what the specific results or performance is in the first leg on the road in your first game of the season.
But it's nice of you, Doyle, to celebrate opening day for the Sounders in the way that you have. I know that today's a big day for you. You've just been waiting all winter.
Lifelong Sounders fan.
He actually just finished his papier-mâché bust of Jordan Morris that he's been working on all offseason.
You going to have the two stick at the bar tonight? Or
always do. Always do, my friend.
All right. Let's hit some preseason headlines. Here's one that might not mean jack, but it might mean everything. Brian White hat trick preseason against the Galaxy, 4-2 win for the Caps. This goes both ways. One, Brian White is just, he's going to level up even more. Super Saiyan 2022. The other side of it is the LA Galaxy still can't defend, apparently. So we'll see how that goes for them. Some news here. Jamiro Montero to San Jose. What do you think, Doyle?
We talked about this on the last show.
Did we?
Yeah. I think we talked about it on the last show. I think it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Listen to the last show if you want my take. Yeah.
Exactly. I thought we did, but I forgot, I guess. But this I don't think we talked in
depth
about.
Listen to the last show because Weeby obviously didn't anyway.
Yeah. I space out a lot. You know how it goes. Fire are close to signing Jairo Torres from Atlas as a young DP. Paul Tenorio's kind of stringing this one along. There was interest, he reported. Now it looks like it's going to be close. Tom Bogert confirms that. Torres is 21 years old. He made his senior El Tri appearance in 2019. That was his debut. He's a product of the Atlas Academy, and that academy has a lot of good players that have come out of it. He's already made 108 appearances across all comps at 21, 8 goals, 8 assists. He would be a winger in Ezra's 4-2-3-1. This seems like a good, ambitious signing for the Fire. This seems positive, like a big step forward. They need a winger. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and we've talked about the trying to tap into the Mexican community there. Obviously, Cuauhtemoc Blanco was a huge part of that when he was there and the energy that it had around it. So a lot of this makes sense for a player in Torres who's maybe hit his ceiling in Mexico. And in the past, the decision would be, do you go to Chivas? Do you try and push into Monterrey or one of those two teams or America? And now maybe MLS comes into this conversation, especially when you see Julian and David Ochoa and Efra getting opportunities with the Mexican national team. It doesn't disqualify you to come to MLS. And if you're going to spend a DP spot on this player, there's value there that you're probably going to give him opportunities. And it's a position of need for Chicago. So it'd be cool if they got a move like this done. Sounds like it's pretty far away still. So maybe wouldn't be for the start of the season.
TBD, we shall see. Sporting KC got a number 9. They've been looking. They've been talking to a lot of people. They went through the Robert Barrett reentry thing. They were apparently in for Josie Altidore. There were a lot of solutions that they tried to figure out, and they end up in Serbia, I believe, with a Montenegrin number 9. Nikola Vucinovic. They don't have the pronunciation guide on the press release, and that is a bummer for me, but he's on loan. He is, I want to say, 25, Doyle? I mean, I think we can all just raise our hand and say we don't know anything about this guy.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's on the fringe of that national team. He's having a nice year in that league. It's not a dominant year. It's very much a wait and see. It feels like a Band-Aid, but it might end up like guys have looked like Band-Aids before and come in and been much more than that. You know, Peter Vermes has a pretty good track record of recruiting players from that part of the world. So, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, it seems to me like they were in a desperate scenario. Mm-hmm. They had to figure this out. Zoran Savic is an assistant coach there. He is he's from Serbia, what was then Yugoslavia back in the day. So I assume they went to their personal networks and they were like, all right, we got to get somebody. This is going to be a striker by committee situation with Kyrie. Here you go. He's available. He's having a decent season. Maybe we can get more out of him in this league than otherwise. How about Dom Dwyer to Atlanta United? Deal done. Switches sides in the rivalry. Knew I was going there, right?
No, I didn't, because I actually honestly forgot he played in Orlando.
Yeah, Orlando fans will be heartbroken, I'm sure. They're all-time legends.
Two-year deal for Dom Dwyer, reported by Jamie Watson to start. I think it's official. I don't know if it is yet. But it seems like it's a very much, it's like loaded with incentives, right?
Yeah.
Loaded.
It's a player that Atlanta's been looking for, which is just a veteran backup to Joseph, so that if they need to rest him, if he's hurt or any reason, they have someone to fill that role. They've never been able to fill that. They tried Kubo Torres and Adam John, and obviously they had Tito Villalba to sort of play in there if they needed to. They've just never had this. So it makes sense from that point of view, and Dom obviously knows this league. I think there was some hope, obviously, based off the contract we saw in Toronto, that he could be that guy. And he wasn't able to be. So now in Atlanta, you're hoping it goes a little bit better.
Hey, and Dom got the buyout, so he got his money. And now he gets an incentive-laden deal to see if he can get his form back as well. It seems like a good risk for everybody involved there. But it is sort of funny to, you know, I still remember like the 3-3 draw at at Mercedes-Benz that Dom was like the snarling villain in, and now Atlanta United has just taken on all the snarling villains into their team. Red Bull has officially signed Luquinha, and Minnesota United officially signed Kervin Arriaga, and we are officially, 9 days away from MLS opening day. Next weekend. It's crazy. This is our last show of previews.
Wow.
We've gone through 25 teams so far. We got 3 left. We'll knock them out today. And then on Monday, I know it's President's Day and we won't actually tape it that day, but tomorrow we will get in the laboratory and try to cook up some great stuff for you with our preseason predictions for individuals, all the different extra time award categories that we go through normally. If you have any suggestions for those, hit us up 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com, or tweet at us at extra time.
Did you ask Josie about our intro?
I didn't. Okay. No, wait, did I? Anders? I forget what I do on this show.
Because you said we like to cook stuff up, and the first thing that came to me was cook up some good stuff for you. And I think Toronto re-released the speech in higher definition when he left, thanking Josie for his time.
Oh, really? In higher definition? Wow, in like 4K? I think we talked about it before, and he was. And, I think he's okay with us having.
It's a great moment.
It's a good moment in his life. You know what I mean? Like, he might not remember that either.
He definitely doesn't.
I don't remember. Yeah. He might not remember that one either. All right, let's get to. Oh, by the way, on the extra time awards, we are going to do the David Goss Theorem Player of the Year now. So that's an addition. So if you have any additions, let us know.
I'm officially on the show. Ma, look, yeah. I made it.
Bingo. Yeah. We still had Bobby Warshaw when he wasn't on the show since we've changed that.
But, yeah, but Inter Miami, here we go. Come on.
He is. He is.
You're talking about a combine MVP, Bobby.
He's got tentacles all throughout sport in the Americas and beyond. Inter Miami 2021, the haiku. David, Phil, and Chris will trust bring better results. Talking sure didn't. That was a reference to all the talk. The quality of club they were going to be, the players that they were going to sign, the profile that they were going to have. And here we are in 2022 with this haiku. Ahoy! Wrecking ball! Restart the expansion clock. Build it like Beckham. Now, the last line I'm not proud of, but I don't know. I don't really know what the last line means, but it was 5 syllables, and bend it like Beckham was fun. But Anders liked the hoy. You don't, Anders, your dad's a seafaring man, and you don't know what a hoy is? Come on, bro. Let's go. Get it together here. What is this season for Inter Miami? We'll talk to Chris Henderson about it here in just a little bit, Doyle. But this is one of the most interesting off seasons in the history of this league, I would say.
Yeah, it's almost a complete teardown. And I understand why, given the way Miami have played over the past 2 years and the budgetary constraints that they have put themselves up against. And it makes it interesting from a roster building perspective. I think that what Chris Henderson did in getting Gregory last year and then Jean Mota this year is going to end up being kind of a treatise on how important it is to have that central midfield right. Like, if those guys are both very good MLS players, then my theory is that it will have a knock-on effect on everything else. And I don't think it would make Miami a playoff team, but it could make them not bad. And like, that seems like the right starting spot. But also, there's no guarantee that they're going to be very good together this year. And there's no guarantee that even if they are very good, the rest of it's going to hold up, because there are question marks just everywhere on the field with this team, which is to be expected after the first 2 years that they had and the sanctions against them for their OG roster build.
Chris Rumpfey, defender in, DeAndre Yedlin in, Damian Lowe in, who you'll be familiar with back in the day as an MLS draft pick, and then he was in the Union system, didn't make it there, went to Scandinavia, has since had a nice career, plays for Jamaica, good player, good center back. You said Jean Mota, he's in, Bryce Duke traded from LAFC. Really, it's not the key signings necessarily. It's more like the outgoing, like the whole squad. Just we've talked about it on the show repeatedly. Like, they just chop, 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 chop. Like, everybody gone. We've got to restart this thing. The star spotlight, Dave, is Gonzalo Higuain. They have one open DP spot, and they have the ghost of Rodolfo Pizarro in their other DP spot. Because nothing came back to them when they loaned him out, again, they just were having to hit the restart button. They still have him filling that DP spot. Higuain, 30 games, 12 goals, 9 assists last year. That's better than I remember, you know, like when you try to think back on it, you're like, oh, yeah, that's actually better than I thought it was.
Yeah, some of those gaming games, they lost by 5 goals or whatever. So that's part of the memory issue, and it's easier to score in those moments. But everything you've heard out of Miami is what you want to hear, and it's what you hear around a lot of guys at this time of year, but that he's coming in fit, that he's coming in focused, and that he understands his role with a young group around him, right? He is the lone elder statesman in this group. And when you do look at the roster that they've had to pull apart, he is the one player that you say he is of DP value. And so that's one of the reasons he's the one guy that stuck around when they're handing out other DPs to Philly and to Monterey, because he has the ability at 12 goals and 9 assists. If you put the team together a little bit better, you're talking about double-double and making life easier for these other players. And the way Miami's had to go about this roster build has been, what are the mechanisms the league has created that we can get players in against the cap and not using cap space? So you look at all the under-22s, young DPs, homegrown players, stuff like that. All of that needs someone to lean on. And I think Higuain's expected to be that player. And we've seen it in moments, but we haven't seen it in any consistent form over the cross across his MLS career. And this has to be the year where he does it.
Ability is probably not what we question with Gonzalo Doyle. And I honestly can't. I'm not saying he's not trying. I'm not saying he's not putting in the effort. But I can certainly understand how he might be, after these 2 years, frustrated. Like, beaten down a little bit. Like I personally would be.
Yeah.
So that to me is the biggest question mark with him. I was like, how can, you know, Phil Neville, how can the fresh faces in the squad, how can Gonzalo himself find something new as far as sort of a motivation here and a drive after what have been really two miserable years?
It's a really good question. I don't know the answer, and the hope is that Phil Neville does. And that's his job, right? Like he's the coach, and he's just as much the coach for the young guys who have never played a big game in their lives and have their whole career ahead of them, as he is for, you know, a legend like Gonzalo Higuain. And the job is to make sure that these guys find that drive and find that optimism and that hope week after week after week, and carve out something better than what they managed each of the past 2 years. There were times last year where I thought Gonzalo Higuain was really impressive, where he was like, you know, he was locked in and he was taking it to teams, but he was also a man on an island, you know, like it, and that looked really demoralizing just in terms of his body language. Like you could see every week there was like one particular moment where his soul would leave his body, and that was that. And like, from my hunch is that if Miami played like good, solid team soccer, nothing flashy, nothing, you know, groundbreaking, but just like look like a team, then he will find what he needs and occasionally elevate the whole thing. I don't know that for sure, though. And after what we've seen the past 2 years, it's a massive if.
I'm sitting here listening to you give that answer and looking at Dave and, you know, just a little bit regretful that we didn't send you both Inter Miami jerseys so that we could have a conversation with the Higuains on this show, like just to make sure you get it straight from the man himself. You know, that's a real mistake on our part. I have to talk to Anders about that. 2222 player to watch, Emerson Rodriguez. I'm not going to lie to you. We're going to talk to Chris Henderson here in a second about some of these guys. I mean, like Campana and et cetera. They got some young players that they've brought in. Rodriguez is a 21-year-old Colombian. He's going to start on the wing, you think? He's got 8 goals, 8 assists, and 55 career games in Colombia. So a pretty good little track record for him. I don't know. I have no insight, so I'm not going to act like I have any. Do you guys have any? Do you want to? Is there anybody on this team as far as young players that get you excited that you're thinking about here? Maybe having a mailbag here about Robbie Robinson. Maybe this is a year for him, although I don't think he's 22 under 22.
No, he's too old now. He's turning 24 this year, I think.
Ooh.
It's tough to find one. And the hope is that a month into the season, we will be able to give you a better answer.
And I think for, as a Miami fan, but also you're talking about like a fan of the league, I think this is an opportunity for a lot of young players to get minutes because this team can't afford veterans. So They've talked about their academy. Obviously, it's early, but how great would it be to have a robust academy coming out of South Florida, just in terms of creating talent and what's out there? And then you look at all of these young players that they've brought in. Leo Campana as well. You mentioned Rodriguez, the Finnish winger that they brought in. Like, all these guys, this is a huge opportunity for you to, like, establish yourself like Lewis Morgan did 2 years ago and become a staple in this club.
They also, Felipe Valencia is a 16-year-old out of the academy, so he's one of the first guys that you look to see that little change for them of trying to tap
Edison,
into South Florida
I should
talent.
Say, Edison Ascona as well. He's an academy kid. He was really good this time last year at CONCACAF Olympic qualifying. He played, you know, he's a dual citizen. He's U.S. and Dominican Republic. He played for the DR. He's been capped by the DR. Like, he looked really good, and he was, like, decently productive as a 17-year-old last year in USL. So I guess we found your answer, Weeby. Like, that, I guess he's the one I'm most interested in.
And if Ian Frey's coming back from his ACL, I mean, look, they've got talent down there. There's no doubt about it. They're just trying to tap into it and figure out how to get there. We'll talk more about that in the coming months and years, I expect. Here is our over-under. The finish in the East. Anders has set this at 9.5. So if you're going over, you're not saying playoffs necessarily. But if you're going under, you're definitely not saying playoffs. Where do you stand on the over-under here for their finish?
I did my standings finally, so I'm going to look at them so I don't have to guess.
I'm doing it afterwards.
Nice.
So last year, I'll just they were 11th last year. So ninth would put them basically probably within like sniffing, 9.5 would put them like sniffing distance of the playoffs.
Well,
they would
under.
Be in a zone.
Yeah. So I have them under.
I suggested the line to Anders in the pre-show, and I said 10.5. And if it was 10.5, I think I would still take under.
I had them 12th, I think, when I did my standing. So there's more hope, I think, than last year for this team, but not by much.
That's a well-timed buzzer right there. I'm going to take the under as well, and I don't think that that's necessarily an indication of whether or not their season is a success or failure of being under that number. Like, they're building the foundation right now. Like, mm-hmm. they literally had to dig down 6 feet under and tear it all out. Like, they've got to get something more than just results, though that'll matter as well. All right, it's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Let's have a chat with Chris Henderson. He's the chief soccer officer and the sporting director at Inter Miami, one of our favorites on the show. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Out to South Florida we go. The chief soccer officer and sporting director of Inter Miami, Chris Henderson, a friend of the show. We're always glad to have you, Chris. How's it going? How you feeling?
Good, Andrew. Great to be here. I love coming on the show. Good to see you, David. I'm excited. It's going well. We're building things. We're in Charleston right now for preseason. We have our last game of the tournament on Saturday against Charlotte.
Have you been to Husk so far while in Charleston?
Not yet. I had to break away for a few days for a conference, but I hear it's a good spot.
You got to go there at lunchtime, even by yourself. It's very worth it. For those of you who don't know about the restaurant, go look it up. It is wonderful. That's the best part about being in Charleston. But let's talk about the offseason. Insanity, man. It just feels like every day, another move, another, you know, addition by subtraction, and then addition as well. Like, how have you experienced this offseason for Inter Miami?
Yeah, I'll be happy when roster compliance comes. It's been a super busy, exhausting offseason, but some moves we felt we needed to make and changes within the club and going in a new direction. Consistency is going to be a big one for us this coming season. I think we're younger, faster, more dynamic than we were. And now it's about getting the group together and gelling and getting those parts to play well together.
Tell me about how the sanctions that you have affected you. How has that changed how you have to go about this remake of a roster that was an expansion team just 2 short years ago, basically?
Yeah, I mean, the sanctions came, we took it as one way. We got to move forward. This is, where we're at right now and how are we going to deal with it? And I think we've been really aggressive. That was our approach. Let's deal with it right now instead of dragging it on. And that's why we've made the moves we have. And, some of them were some really difficult moves into the roster and being able to create some value to add to our club. And sometimes you have to lose some really good pieces to be able to, you know, get some allocation money, get some resources to make some other moves. And we did that.
How would you define what you're doing with this roster? I mean, in my mind, in some ways, I think, okay, well, this is like a, it's almost like a complete teardown, like a remake. How do you define it in your mind?
I would say bringing players in with a winning mentality, players who are going to compete every single day, a reset kind of the player culture and who we are and where we're going. And as I said earlier, consistency, being able to be a team that can be consistent throughout the season. It's a long season, but it comes fast. And, you know, through this marathon, you have to be able to get through things. You have to rely on your full roster. I feel like we've added some depth. We have some good young players coming through, and I'm really excited about the future, the talent we have in South Florida, and what our academy is going to bring through our system.
Let's start with a couple of those new toys you've brought in. Obviously, you're known for your eye for talent, what you've been able to do over your time in Seattle and Miami. We have Campana, Emerson Rodriguez, Mota. Tell us a little bit about the process of finding and bringing all these players in, as well as what you think they can bring to an MLS team.
Yeah, I mean, with every signing, as every club goes through, time will tell whether they were good signings or not. One, I would have to say, recognize the group that I worked with, Nikki Budalich, Mark Prasant, Sam Gregory, Megan Cameron, the work that group initially has done in the offseason, working together as a team, and then Phil and Jason and the coaching staff, their involvement. Adding Emerson Rodriguez from Millonarios, fast, young, attacking, exciting player who can play off the right, will go at players. Jean Mata is like a playmaker in midfield. He will pair next to Gregory, and he can play at the 10. He can play off to the left. He's versatile, super smart, thinks ahead of the game. I think he's going to be able to connect our lines in maybe what we, you know, were missing in the past. But we're excited to add Jean Mata, top player. Campania also. Didn't have to use a foreign spot with him. Good back to goal player, can help us keep the ball as we're moving forward in attack. At times may be in a pair with Gonzalo up top, but we have other options there as well. Robbie Robinson can play next to Gonzalo. We also have Ariel Lassiter, who's had a good preseason.
When you think about the foundation of this sporting operation, you went and thanked a lot of people that, you know, we talk to GMs all the time. They don't often go down the line like that. Help me understand what you feel like you've accomplished in building that out, and then the foundation that gives you going forward. What's the most important thing in a group like that, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think the last year there was a lot of time spent on the foundation of the club, putting pieces in place, making sure we had a good academy director with Craig Dalrymple now, and we have a good, clear pathway through the first team, a scouting department, analytics department. Now, this year, we focused on a performance department, and it's about trying to bring in the best people and what they do and collaborating together and just letting them do their job. And if everyone is doing that and feels the freedom to do their job, I think that collective adds for a better organization all the way through. And I feel like we have a really good foundation now to support our first team. But at the end of the day, it's pro soccer, and it's about results on the first team. So, we get that part right. We have everything underneath and surrounding the team to support that.
But when you look at this team, for fans, it's the players who are there long term that, you know, build their identity with the club, the players that they get used to supporting. You're buying their jerseys. Who do you look at and say, these are the guys that Inter Miami is built around that will be here, that will be a part of success when it comes down the road?
Yeah, I mean, you try and build a team and you look at the pieces, and, you know, you hope players will stay 4 or 5 years and you can run with those. You know, Gregory is a great centerpiece to that. Jean Mota next to him. Higuain is super important this year. He's come in fit. He's a leader of this group. He's like the elder statesman who gets all the young guys together, and they kind of follow his lead. So having his commitment is going to be really important. And then some of the young pieces we've added. I mean, Lassiter isn't young, but he still has something to prove in this league. Rodriguez, a great example of a young player. And then we have others who can play in the back. McVay is a good addition. Damian Lowe is a good leader. So I look at the spine of the team. Marsman in the back. We have a solid spine. And then we're building those pieces around it. A mixture of guys who want the ball under pressure and can keep the ball under pressure, and some fast guys who can stretch teams. So it's a balance between the two.
Is there any emotional scar tissue to work through here, Chris? Like, you know, I'm just thinking of these first 2 years and all the changes and everything that's happened. Like, you know, for a guy like Gonzalo, who maybe had different expectations when he originally signed, for the whole club, it feels like there might be a different, like a psychological side to get through.
Yeah, I mean, the one player I have to add that's super important for the culture and the future is DeAndre Yedlin. I've known him since he was 6 years old. So he is going to be really important for us and important for the mentality. And adding those kind of pieces helps the psychology of the team. It helps the psyche of the group, and going into games, knowing we have some guys who are going to give it all, compete, and have a winning mentality. So, you know, I think if you're able to get success with that group of players, then it helps go through the culture of the club. But I feel like we have people committed. They believe in where we want to go. The ownership support with the Moss brothers, Jose, Jorge, David Beckham, they're completely supportive and behind where we want to go. And you know, I thank them for allowing us to make some of the transactions and the future transactions that we will make to add to this club.
How much patience have you had to preach, or do you preach, with this project?
I think it's just trusting in the process. I think that's what's important, and believe that we're building something that has long-term stability and that's sustainable. And some of that comes to just one player signing at a time, and then being able to get everyone buying into what we're doing as a club. And yeah, the pieces are in place, and sometimes it comes down to the combinations on the field and how players gel and how they work together on the field.
You mentioned one piece at a time. You have one huge opening in a DP spot still available. Should fans expect to see another DP brought in, whether before the season or this year?
We're working hard on that DP spot, and we have some really good options in front of us. People who can come in and galvanize our team and be a catalyst for a winning environment. And those types of players are, it's contagious throughout the group when you bring a player like that in, who wants to win, who wants to work. And it seems to me that when you do that, the other top players within the team raise their level. And that's what we want. That's what we want to bring in. We want to bring in someone who can be, you know, 3, 4, 5 years at the club and change the way the team plays on a daily basis.
So obviously every team wants to win MLS Cup. That's obvious. That's easy. That's the point. But in your mind, or in Inter Miami fans' minds, what should be a win in 2022? What's a successful year? What are things that, if you look back, you'll say this, we're on the right road coming out of this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think consistency. As I said before, we need to be able to compete at a consistent level where, you know, if you're going to have periods in the season where you have dips and you have some injuries and you're having to piece things together. But, you know, can you bounce back from those quickly, or do you go on a streak of going down? And good teams find a way to respond after a poor result. And I think that would be a big step for me, is how we respond in those moments and how we can be over a long period of time. And if you can do that, then it puts you in a position to make the playoffs. Then it puts you in a position to advance in the playoffs through your experiences that you have during the season. So I think it's a matter of building. Can we take a really big step forward this year and then continue that going into next year?
block by block, that's the way for Inter Miami. While we have you, Chris, I can't resist. I know Andre's in the background saying rap, rap, rap. But I got to ask you about the big picture. Your offseason, crazy. This offseason for MLS has been sort of unprecedented in my mind. Do you see it the same way with the level of sales, the volume of sales, the incoming players? Like, where, in your opinion, is this league right now when it pertains to sort of this world market that we're really pushing into?
Yeah, I'm really proud of where the league's at. To be someone who played here starting in 96 to where we are today, I look at it as finally they're starting to see MLS has players who can play anywhere in the world. And I just think now it's coming really fast. And I just was in a transfer room conference the other day, and all the clubs were talking about, oh, what's the next market you're looking at? And everyone's mentioning MLS. And, you know, some of the Bundesliga clubs, for example, have been looking for the last 5-6 years at our young players. So I'm really proud of where we're at now. We will continue to grow really quickly. So as a former player, now GM, it's great to see.
All right, we're looking on in Miami with a lot of interest. Let's put it that way, a big season in 2022. Chris Henderson, always a pleasure, man.
Thanks, guys.
Just so everyone knows, Chris Henderson ran 14 miles before he sat down for that interview, and his heart rate was still at a resting number. That man is in the best shape of any GM in MLS. I'm putting my stamp down on that.
I should probably adopt a pre-show routine. Like, he has a pre-game routine. Yeah. Used to go to Seattle, and you look up in the stands and nobody's there. It's 3 hours before game time, and Chris Henderson's just running stairs for an hour, and then comes down to talk to you. Not even a hair wrong.
No. Not a drop of sweat. Now, I will say, I've seen Carlos Bocanegra do similar in Atlanta, and that's a large stadium as well. We're talking two, natural football stadiums, so those guys could go for a race, and we'll see.
Yeah, fortunately for Inter Miami fans, if Chris lives to 100, that's good news for them, because this is a long-term build for them. Okay, sorry. Toronto FC, 2021. Florida is home. Old legs, new legs. Press is here. Big test for Armas.
Whoa. What a time capsule of a...
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you know what? Somebody's going to dig that one up a couple decades from now and be like, what the hell is this? We got to go check the history books. That's like a after note right there. So things have changed in Toronto. So their 2022 haiku. Time to play the kids. Bob will embrace the challenge. Stars in the summer. I don't think this team right now was haiku-wise was worth getting too clever about. Their depth chart remains quite seemingly incomplete, I would say. It is a lot of young guys, a lot of academy guys, of various degrees of MLS and first team experience. I mean, Bob is just going to have to play the kids, and in some way, I think that he's going to enjoy that. We know that he is a guy that likes to teach, that likes to be hands-on, that likes to work with young players, that likes to see that sort of rapid improvement. We saw that with guys like Latif Blessing and Mark Anthony Kay, Edward Atuesta and others in LA. And that's the way it's going to have to be this year as well. And then in the summer, Lorenzo Insigne comes into a team that you hope is a little more well-formed, that Pozuelo can kind of drag them along from a creative standpoint until then. But it feels, Doyle, there are going to be some natural growing pains here.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. It is another team. They haven't gone as complete a rebuild as Miami, but it's been a lot. The central defense looks like it's probably upgraded. Both fullback slots, real massive question marks at this point. The composition of the midfield, Bradley Osorio and Pozuelo, all very good players. Can they cover ground and win the ball? Io coming back, I think they did the absolute right thing in using their only U22 slot on him, because I think he's a potential 20-goal scorer, but he's also gotten hurt each of the past 2 years. It's not clear who the starting wingers are at this point. There are so many questions to answer. Right now, it feels like it's too many. This does not strike me as a playoff team right now.
Here's the toughest part, too. Let's just say you find those answers and you put it all together and the team is what it is. Then the biggest player on your team comes into the roster in the middle of that. So it's not just one question, or it's not one set of questions. You'll have to do it twice no matter what, because Insigne is arriving in July. And if they are the best team in MLS, then that's going to shake things up. And that seems fairly unlikely. But no matter what, you sort of have to go into this first half of the season with an eye towards how does he then fit in to the rest of this and how do the pieces all fit together. And I think that's really complicated. And I think it's tough to say that it's going to be hugely successful this year because it's just so much, so many moving pieces over the course of the year.
I actually think this is I think Bob has an advantage in that sense, and that he knows what's coming. He knows, you would think, when it's coming, like middle of July, maybe late July, depending on how much rest you want to give Insigne. And he doesn't have anybody in that spot. It's not like there's going to be somebody at left wing or right wing or wherever they're going to play him that's like locked in. So he can start to build over the course of these months. Like,
but are you sure there would be
fits that guy?
But are you sure there would be wingers without him coming? When you look at this team, would that be the way you line it up? And I think that's the problem, is you do have to build it that way that he'll step in when it's not the way maybe the roster's built without him. And that's the question mark that they can't really find. What's Pozuelo's
best
spot?
But without him, they're not a playoff team anyway. So what's, like, it's more important to build to what he adds than it is to try to, like, paper over results and play the way that this roster might be better constructed otherwise. Like, your whole goal is to be at the optimal point to integrate Insigne when he gets there, so he elevates you from whatever you were before. And really to get, like, I don't know, who is it going to be, Schaffelberg or Petrasso or Jaquil Marshall, to make sure your outside backs and these young guys feel comfortable and confident. Let's get into it real quick here. The signings, obviously, Bob Bradley's the biggest signing here. Shane O'Neill's a signing that's very solid, I think. He'll be depth at center back. Carlos Salcedo is their biggest signing. I like the Jesus Jimenez signing because he's not like, hey, I'm going to be a starter sort of guy. He's sort of a, hey, if things with Io don't go exactly right, maybe we could play two with Io. He seems like more of a creative force, whereas Io could be more of that like in the box nine, and then Insigne obviously in the summer. Star spotlight is Pozuelo. Pozuelo's going to run more than he has before, I think, is a safe assumption to make here. I will be watching that very closely. Last year was not his year. He was an MVP, and then he was not an MVP. One goal, four assists in 19 games last year, Doyle. He wasn't healthy. What do we expect from him?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really massive question. I think given how Bob Bradley has preferred to line his teams up over the past couple of years and what we've seen in preseason, it's a 4-3-3 with Pozuelo not really as a 10, but more as one of those dual eights. As you said, that means more running, more pressing. There will be more defensive transitions, getting pressure to the ball early, winning 50-50s. And these are not necessarily things that you associate with Alejandro Pozuelo. So the argument that is being made with this roster construction is just an argument of pure talent. That, like, more like forget fit, just having more talent is the differentiator. I've never been particularly enamored of that argument, and I'm not really holding my breath here, but, like, maybe it works because he is a talent. Like, he's an MVP caliber talent. I just think he's limited, and you have to use him in a certain way, and it doesn't, like, it sounds like Bob's going to ask a lot more of him than Greg Vanney ever really did.
Look at that. Doyle just throwing the tag over his shoulder. Didn't even take the tag off. Just threw it right on. Oh, man. How about Jaquil Marshall Ruddy? Let's see where 2,222 player to watch. I think they could sell him for a lot of money right now. They haven't, which means that they think they could sell him for more later. He hasn't really played first-team soccer. We're about to see it, Dave. This is going to be it. Sounds like he's the right back. How do you feel about that?
I think Toronto has shown in the past that there is a pathway to getting into that first team, and it's one of those moves where that's not his natural position. That isn't the position you hope he plays, but it's a way to get him on the field, and I don't think there's a better way to do it than playing alongside Carlos Salcedo, who's going to be as experienced a center back as there is in this league, and ability to cover ground and cover behind you. So it's an opportunity there. I don't think he's going to be the only name we're talking about. You mentioned in the haiku, I think Ralph Parisso is going to have some minutes to play in this team and bring something to that midfield that no one else does, or Noble Akello. One of those two. You've got center forward depth that's coming out through the academy, Jacob Schaffelberg as well. Like, this is a team that has talked about using their academy for years, and they've invested in it higher than a lot of other clubs around MLS, and they haven't totally gotten the payout outside of Io Akinola. And Bob Bradley's shown his willingness to teach young players, but also to use them. And I think that should be exciting for people who, I think a lot of TFC fans have been waiting for them to really like activate and tap into this academy.
Jaden Nelson's another guy on the wing, if you're looking for names there.
I mean, you could go through half the league and talk about guys who came out of the, or have played in the TFC Academy that don't play for Toronto. And I think now they'd like to change that a little.
What is a good season from Jaquil Marshall-Ready?
Showing that he can play at a professional level.
Yeah.
So getting 10 to 15 starts in MLS would be a huge year for him.
If you talk to European scouts about like who's the best young prospect in MLS, who's the best teenage prospect in MLS, it's unanimous that it's Jaquil Marshall-Ruddy. So yes. I think like ahead of Gaga Slonina, ahead of, I don't know, Moses Nyman, ahead of all of these kids who deserve hype and who played significant minutes last year, it's Jaquil Marshall-Ruddy. So I think the bar is higher than that, David.
I
disagree, because that is based off his potential, which is great. That doesn't mean he's ready to change the game in MLS now. And I think you've seen players
I think the bar for a successful season for him is to look like, you know, we're having this conversation at the end of the year, like who's the best young player in MLS, and he's one of the first three names we mentioned.
To me, it's like a Kevin Paredes-esque breakout season.
So I don't think
Kevin Paredes wasn't a starter his first year.
He didn't have a breakout season. Kevin Paredes had a natural progression.
That's what I'm saying about Jaquil Marshall-Ruddy.
So for you, you want him to have like Kevin Paredes last year. He played 1,500 minutes. He had 3 goals. He had 1 assist, and acquired obvious European interest. You think that's it? So I think Marshall-Ruddy has to be a level higher than that.
Interesting. That's maybe the most interesting thing about this team to watch in the first 6 months. I mean, there are a lot of things. I think this Toronto team is actually fascinating. And we've used a lot of time talking about it and hit that buzzer right there. Okay, how about Io? What's a good season from Io, Dave? Give me your like boiled down Twitter answer on this one.
I guess it would start with 2,500 minutes. Like, be healthy and play.
Wouldn't you be happy with 2,000 minutes?
Yeah, same.
Can you afford that if you're Toronto FC?
I
guess that's the Jimenez.
That's a lot of minutes for Jesus Jimenez coming out of Poland, or Luka Petrasso. I don't know. Maybe.
But I think the sentiment is right, though, is that to stay healthy and to, if he's healthy, I think he'll be productive. Here's the over under 10.5 combined goals and assists for Lorenzo Insigne, half season, possible debut in the beginning of July sometime, maybe even against Montreal, which would be awesome. 10.5 feels low to me, given the talent level and the investment on combined goals and assists. We've seen other players come into this league and just, you know, Nico Ladero, Pipa Higuain, et cetera, light it on fire.
Yeah, but I think even Ryan Gauld last year was fantastic. He only hit 10. He had 4 goals and 6 assists. I'm going to hit the under on that. I think there will be an adjustment for him, especially because he'll be coming off a full season without a full off season. He'll be prepping for the World Cups. I think under 10.5.
I think over, because of the same reasons Doyle just said, which is he has to hit form going into a World Cup. So he has to play at a high level. He has to push himself to get into fitness going into that tournament. And that means that he's not going to play in second gear. They're not going to sit him every other game. Like, he has to get his legs back under him after what'll probably be only a 3-4 week layoff in between seasons. And if he's going to do that, then if he's going to be on the field, you'd assume he'd be able to get 5 goals and 6 assists with how good he can be.
All right, this is fine meme. The big weakness or concern pitfall?
That they were a tire fire last year and without Insigne to start the year. It's the same. Listen, Carlos Salcedo is obviously a massive upgrade. He's also not a guy that I look at that controls and marshals a back line. Now, maybe just having him in there brings back some of what Chris Mavinga was over the last few years because he doesn't have to cover for another player. But Salcedo takes risks. And so if there is not complete solidity in that back line, you don't have cover in midfield for them. And you've had issues at goalkeeper as well with we don't even know who the two left backs will be and if they've ever even played – or sorry, two fullbacks will be and if they play in MLS. So there's a really good chance that this team is kind of a mess to come out the gates and they could find their feet over the course of this year. But that's probably not a formula for making the playoffs.
So I think this is fine is the midfield falls apart because there's not enough defense there. And one of Osorio, Bradley, or Pozuelo has to be replaced. I don't think this is a playoff team.
I would agree. I just think there's too many holes right now. But Bob Bradley surprised people before. Charlotte FC. Haiku 2022. How can you be screwed when you haven't played a minute? Ask the manager. So, yeah, we're going to play that one up probably all year. It'll probably never go away. It's just such a good...
I think it's a liberal use of the term we. You are going to play that one up all year.
Yeah, so. That's fair. That's a good... The key signings, the whole roster. So what signings do you like, Doyle, for this expansion project? What are the names out there that you're like, oh, yeah, that's a good one. Good one. Give me three or four names that you really like.
I don't know if I could go that high. I'll say that...
You don't have three or four?
I mean, Alcivar and Franco, the two Ecuadorian central midfielders, on paper, they make a lot of sense. They have the pedigree and the profile of guys who can be pretty successful MLS players, and that seems like a nice starting spot. I thought Anton Walks was pretty good last year. I don't know if he's a starter in MLS, but he was decent. I'll tell you what, they didn't make the choice with the number one overall super draft pick that I would have made. I think that one's pretty tough. I think they made two really good choices in the expansion draft in Ismael Tajiri Shradi and Tristan Blackman, and they traded both those guys. They burnt an international roster slot on a goalkeeper, which it's all stuff that is like it raises some red flags. That said, I don't know, man. Like it doesn't seem like a FC Cincinnati level disaster in the waiting. Even though Miguel Angel Ramirez thinks otherwise, they have, they're nominally too deep at every position. Like they didn't forget to get a backup D-mid, So it's like this could end up working out if the guys that they signed are as good as they should be. But also, like we're a week away from their debut, and their winger core is not inspiring any types of optimism for obvious reasons.
Yeah, they're not too deep there, and at the 10 it's Ben Bender and then obviously Christian Ortiz. Well, so
yeah, it's Ortiz. I cannot imagine it's Ben.
No,
they've been playing Ortiz. They've been playing Ortiz on the wing,
which is where he's played his whole career.
Right, he's a playmaking winger, and then they have probably Franco and Ruiz or Bender as the co number eights in this 4-3-3. It'll look a little bit like Austin's 4-3-3 last year, but what they started with, where it was two guys in front of a single pivot,
which
it should anyway.
I actually think it's a decent comp for them. Of Austin came out, they had a cohesive vision of what their team was. They just didn't have the talent. To win in MLS, and then they made that move later in the year. It wasn't enough to get in the playoffs, but right now they're a competitive playoff team because they brought Jurici in. And so I think that's probably the best case scenario for Charlotte. Clearly, they thought they had those guys available to them right now, and they've had two moves now fall apart. So it won't happen going into the season. It'll have to happen in the summer, but if you can show that your back five or back seven is stable, then that's a pretty good place to go from. And if Swiderski shows that he can, be a high-level MLS forward, then you sort of give yourself that flexibility to wait and find the right guys out there that can be your 10 or your go-to winger that they thought they had in Maciej, as well as the Polish winger that they had fall through. So based off their own view of their roster, they're not there, right? If you had two big-time signings fall through and you haven't replaced them, they believe that talent doesn't exist. But it seems like they've built from the bottom, or at least from the back forward, and that's a stable, smart way to not be FC Cincinnati.
Speaking of FC Cincinnati, I think one of us is there a march for that opening home game against the Galaxy?
I don't know.
If you see Pipa Higuain lookalike, yeah, in Charlotte at that game, it is David Goss. You have booked your travel. You are in.
I'm going to their first two games. I'm a Charlotte FC supporter.
The TID, man. You like?
Yeah, I won't come on your podcast. Good point, Anders. Thank you for that. I would never, but I will come to the game. I will be in DC for the opening.
You like
game?
To buy him a beer?
Yeah. I'll be in D.C. for the opening game for work, and then I'm going to Charlotte for fun because I think they said they're plus 65,000 on tickets now is the unofficial number that hasn't been updated. So I thought what'd be cooler than going to a sold-out stadium to watch MLS. And I'm a huge Douglas Costa fan, so I had to get there.
Yeah, look, but if he says something nice to you, just know that he's lying to your face.
Not even.
He's just like, straight up, just a fake, yeah. Just a complete fake. Karol Swiderski is our star spotlight. He's the first DP in club history, 25-year-old Polish forward, been in the national team, scored some goals, 60 goals in 263 career games, Doyle, coming over from the Greek league. He would seem to be a guy that would need, I mean, every forward needs service, but this could be an interesting start for Karol.
Yep.
From what we've seen from him, there's a level of mobility there, right? He'll come back, yep. He'll link up. He won't create, as you said, for himself, but he at least won't hang up top and wait, sort of like what we saw with Brenner over large portions of last season. Like, I think this will be a guy who, unfortunately, will be the central hub of your possession and your creativity. And then the question becomes, can anyone get their head down and get to the end line and pull balls back for him? And if you can do that, he'll be dangerous. He'll find his movement in the box, and he knows what to do once he gets in that position. There probably won't be a ton of that early on, but if he can be dangerous, then he can get you a couple goals early in the season to give you some confidence to play off of. And you look at it, the fullback should be able to do that. I wouldn't say Harrison Offal's in his prime anymore, and we haven't seen a ton from Joseph Mora because of injury. But if those guys are in, or Jalen Lindsay, whatever it is, they're players who have shown that capability over the course of their MLS careers to at least create opportunities.
Jordi Alcevar is our 22-under-22 player to watch. Got to have a good D-mid in this league. Doyle, what do they need him to be?
A good D-mid in this league. if we want to go back to the Austin comparison, right? Because it does look like it'll be a similar structure. The thing that just shredded Austin last year was a lack of field coverage in central midfield. They weren't able to win the ball out of the scrums, and they didn't get pressure to the opposition quickly in defensive transitions, so that whoever was first on the ball in the whatever midfield Austin was going against, they had time to pick their head up and pick their pass, and it was off to the races. Alcevar needs to be able to do a decent job of preventing those types of moments, because if he doesn't, this could end up being like an Austin season or worse.
Our mailbag question is, who do you think will be Charlotte's best, most important player in 2022? That's an interesting question, I think. We haven't mentioned one name that I think is going to be really crucial for them, Guzman Corujo, who's a Uruguayan center back over from Nacional, has a ton of experience in that league, in Libertadores and Sudamericana, etc. That one feels like he and maybe like Walks in that zone, and then Alcevar. Those guys feel like the ones that are likely to be the most important. Do you guys have any other names you want to throw out?
I think the center back core has to. If it's not Guzman, it's Shobinski or Christian McCune, whoever it is, you need to have that established piece in your team. And then Doyle mentioned they brought in an international goalkeeper, which is not normally how you'd prefer to build a roster, but if he's good, then it's a solid foundation for your team.
Anybody gonna say Christian Fuchs?
No.
Who do you think is gonna have the C? Feels like he would be a candidate too.
I mean, it seems
if
like
he's on,
it,
if he's in the team, the he's 35. Yeah, he's 35. Yeah, I think he was already injured. Maybe. I thought I read that, but he came off a game injured. I don't know.
He was decent in the USL last year, but like just decent.
His first game ever was against Red Bull too, and he got bodied by my boy Omar. So watch out.
Over under 40.5 points, that would mean they are out of the playoffs, but they're at least sneaking around. I'm gonna go under on 40.5.
Under. Okay, here we go. Over or under wooden spoons owned by Charlotte at the end of this year? 0.5.
I'll go under on that one. I'll say that someone else will be worse.
Come on. Cincinnati hasn't done that much to push themselves out of spoon territory. You know, like they had 20. They averaged almost just barely more than half a point a game last year. I would say under on that as well. I think they find a way out, but it's going to be a competition, certainly at the bottom, to see who takes
who
that one
the
on.
Line at 40.5.
I don't know. That must have been under
Charlotte.
Who, here's teams that here's
are
teams
they,
that were
who
under.
Who are they? Are they signing Mbappe and Haaland this summer? Like, how do you get to 40.5 points for this
the
team?
The teams under 40.5 last year were Chicago at 34, Toronto at 28, Cincinnati again at 20. In the Western Conference, it was Dallas, Austin, and Houston, the entire state of Texas, rolling in under 40 points. So, yeah, that finishes us up here. I think that this is fine meme is the big concern. Weakness, pick and falls. They don't have the talent, and they're not able to integrate that talent in time, and therefore they are in that Austin territory of like around 30 points or competing for
the
a spoon.
This is fine meme, though, is the talent defensively. I think we can all safely say they don't have the talent in the attack right now. If it comes to be...
Well, that's the why this could be their year, not why
no,
this is
no.
fine. Because this is fine as like things are burning
no,
around
but I'm
me.
Saying if they don't have the talent defensively, the players they actually meant to bring in and where they built,
yes.
then it's a train wreck. If those players are fine, then they'll be competitive, they'll be in games. But that's the this is fine meme, is that all of the pieces that they felt good about in defensive midfield and along the back line, they were wrong about. Because Zoran Kroneta... what you're hoping on this team is that his pulse for talent around the world, the finger he has on the pulse around the world, is good. Because if not, none of these dudes have played in MLS. And you don't have a ton to fall back on if it turns out that they're not up to the level of this league.
Yeah, sort of seems like Charlotte's in a situation right now, at least. I mean, again, depending on your words, you could say screwed, but I didn't. That, you know, it's kind of like, this is fine meme. Either they're going to be surrounded by fire or they're going to be engulfed in it. We don't know which one. It's going to be just yet. All right, that's it. 28 teams. I kind of feel like all the ones we did way back, you know, like a month ago are just completely irrelevant.
Yeah, well, everyone's signed.
Just, things have changed so much. So, like, if we did your team way back at the beginning, just know that you can't hold us accountable for literally anything we said.
Do you
want to
make today's show 12 hours? We'll just go back and we'll do the
just
first
do them all,
20
just
teams
do them all again.
Yeah.
Why not? Let's finish up our top fives. How about that? Number nines. So I think while you were gone pre-show, Doyle, we might have switched some things around here. So feel free to, you know, speak or if you want to hold your peace here. Number five, Chicharito. Number four, Adam Buxa, who, Doyle, you had higher, but we moved down. Number three, Joseph Martinez. Number two, Raul Ruiz Diaz. And number one, Tati. How do you feel about this list in retrospect after some chops and changes from the Politburo here, Doyle?
I think it's the right five center forwards. You know, based upon what they did last year, what we can expect from them this year, all around impact on the game. I'm fine. I had Buxa higher. I think he still has another level that he can hit, and I'm kind of expecting that this year. So I had him number two. But like other than that, it's fine. Like these are the five guys. That said, there are some guys who can maybe push in this year.
Gonzalo Higuain could get in here. I mean, if things, you know, look, they may not be great, but he might be personally great. Brian White, he of the hat trick in the preseason, and many a fun moment for the Whitecaps. He could Andiamo his way up, I don't know, into more of a contention on this list. Gustavo Bow sort of like lies in that Demir Krylock zone we talked about last time, where it's like, oh man, we don't really have a very snug fit for them, but they would be in a top five of whatever category you want to drop them into, like second forwards or whatever it is. Jeremy Abobase could be poised for a big season.
I like that.
That's an interesting one. Io, we already talked about. Chicho Arango, LAFC fans are like, what the hell? You come on, how are you going to have Chicho
gonna,
in here?
Is he going to get 27 penalties again? Is that how he's?
I mean, if Vela's healthy, he might.
Actually, well, he's not taking him.
Yeah, he wouldn't take him. Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing for him. Giassi's artist, maybe a bounce back season from Giassi. Any other names? Oh, there's a bunch of Dave. There's a bunch of guys that we just didn't know how to rank.
I put the list. I think it was five. You've got a DP center forward signing in Philly, in Orlando,
two.
In Houston, two in Philly. That's right. I think those are all names where you can't feel strong enough about it preseason, but all of them, if they're able to hit the ground running, could be in this conversation. This guy that SKC brought in as well that we discussed in the open, if you can find your feet and score 15 goals in this league, you can push into that combo. I think Mason Toy should be mentioned as well.
Okay, so
if he's healthy.
I'm going to interrupt you. I'm going to give you a question that I think you're really going to like.
Uh-oh.
Which domestic center forward is most likely to push into this? Out of the group, it is Mason Toy in Montreal, Io up in Toronto, Brian White in Vancouver, Jeremy Abobase in San Jose, and Miguel Berry in Columbus.
I'll say Mason Toy. Of all of us, I think
I'm going Tom Barlow.
I think Toy showed last year that if he had stayed healthy, he would be in that combo. And
seven goals in 900 minutes.
And
for Mason Toy.
You're probably talking about the best team of all those teams, right? Where if Abobase's a better player, San Jose, I don't know that they'll have enough around him. Io as well with the conversation we just had, and I don't think Miguel Berry will be the starter. In Columbus, especially World Cup year. If you think Columbus will be improved from last year, that means Zardes is getting chances that people are creating for him. So I put it to Brian White and Mason Toy, and I think it'll be Toy.
I'm going to go with Jesus Ferreira.
Oh, I left Jesus out. Yeah.
You left Jesus out.
I just don't think of him as the number nine. That's my bad.
Yeah.
So
well,
if we add...
It's like a false, he's like a false nine.
Right,
but, you know,
right.
Like, whatever it might
if
be.
We
however
add,
you want to talk about
if
it.
If we add Jesus Ferreira to that list, does that change your reckoning, David?
No, I still go Toy.
So okay. Let me ask you one more thing.
I think Jesus is going to have, let me put the over under, how would I put the over under on goals and assists combined at 18 and a half?
I would go under.
For Jesus Ferreira?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go
he
under.
He was right there last
shade.
Year.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was 9 and 8 last year.
Something like that.
Yeah.
He was right
as
there.
A 10. Yeah. I'm still
no
going to go under.
Okay. Just saying. Just throwing it out there. Sorry, I interrupted you, Diff.
No, you interrupted Dora.
I thought you were...
But I don't know what his question
was. Oh, I was going to say, what are the chances that at the end of the year, U.S. national team fans are just like pulling their hair out that Io Akinola chose Canada over the U.S.? Pretty decent, right?
Yeah, probably like, pretty, yeah.
If he stays healthy, he's nasty.
Especially because then he's like down... Like, they'll have like five dudes.
Oh, he won't even. Yeah. We don't even know that he'll make the Canada roster.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. We didn't even talk about Cavallini hardly at all with Vancouver. Like
he could score.
If the U.S. had Cavallini right now, we
goals
might be starting
and still
him.
Miss that team.
Yeah,
like
it's crazy, man.
A lot of talent. All right, that's it for our team by team season previews. We'll be back on Monday, recorded Friday again. So we'll hit you up for award candidates, etc. We'll do our individual award predictions for Monday. And then that will also, the Golden Boot Draft will also be a part of that, which I'm greatly looking forward to this year to try to make up for my utter failure.
Who
last
won
year.
Last year? And we never calculated
Did you win? And
I don't know,
but
picked,
did you win? And that's
I
like
think
a
I picked,
facetious question.
No, I picked Rui Diaz, but I don't know who my other pick was, so I don't remember.
I feel like Kalen might have won. I don't know. Anders says he has it. He'll
figure
it out.
Are you ready for the mailbag?
Yeah, we'll reveal it. Oh, and by the way, Thursday we'll do our big week one preview as well as our team previews. And this year we're introducing a new concept, which is the trophy draft. So we are going to go through and draft every single team.
Every team.
Every team, all 28. And whoever has the most trophies at the end of the year
and the wooden
wins
spoon,
that one.
And the wooden spoon counts as a trophy.
Should it count?
I should.
Do I get?
Absolutely.
I think it should count. I think it should count because that'll make those middle picks really interesting where you're like, yeah. Oh, they win. And then somebody jumps in and they're like, FC Cincinnati, baby. Let's go. Four Pete.
Can I pick PSG? Is that an option? Okay.
No.
It's MLS teams only.
All right, let's do the mailbag and get out of here. 4012060MLS, extratimeofsoccer.com.
Good friend of the show, Jason in DC, says, from the end of MLS Cup, presented by Audi, like that, to the first game of the Scotiabank CONCACAF Champions League.
So
great sponsor. There's a void for MLS fans. Do you think for those 2.5 months, there's room for an MLS Legends tournament presented by Tiger Balm? There have to be enough veteran legendary players to fill six teams, right? Is there any chance MLS or AARP can make this happen?
I love this. I also love the fact that he threw in the Tiger Balm there. Back in the day, high school baseball days, we used to just lather that up in everybody in high school classrooms. Everybody hated us. It smells horrid. I love this. How would we do it? We can't do a full field, right?
Five
like that's
aside,
not entertaining. Five aside.
It would be like the big three.
Who would be
right?
our captain?
Like,
what do you do?
Who are your captains? So we need
who are our captains?
Six teams.
Can we pull in like current coaches get pulled into this as captains, et cetera? Probably. Or does it have to be like retired but not doing anything? And how old do they have to be?
I'm going to go first two picks off.
AARP is involved.
I'm going first two picks off the back because we'd be talking too much. I'm going D-Row and Jimmy Conrad as two captains. I think they'd both be into it. I think they both can still play. And I think they'd both be good part of this. So those are my first two.
I actually don't know that the ability to still play matters that much to me. Like I almost want to see the opposite of just... You know, legends who are just so far past it, but still having a good time. Let's see, captains. If we're going captains that could still play, I feel like Eddie Pope could just run people over still, I'm sure. I know that he hasn't let himself go, so I'd love to see that one. Clint Mathis would be fun. I think he's on maybe the opposite end of
but
the spectrum.
But he'll still score goals.
Right,
doesn't matter. Get him anywhere near
like
the ball.
I like that. Marco would be a fun one to have in there.
Mm-hmm.
Marco Echeverry would be a good one. Who you got, Doyle? You're the old school MLS... You know, memory bank here.
Yeah, I don't know. I lost interest. Nice. Let's move on to the next one.
Our team would start with Joel Impair. Everyone knows that. He basically puts
anything else.
He would just put together Hans Bacca's team. That's what Doyle would do.
Are we having DJ Soli like out there? Because if it's like five aside, we need to have a party going on. So we had DJ Soli out there.
Dave Vandenberg, what a squad! Oh. I think he's an assistant coach.
Killer
right
squad
now in New England.
Anything else in here? Yeah. Are we done and dusted here? That's it from us. All right, have a great week, everybody. That's it for us. Well, no, that's weekend coming up. Yeah, we'll see you on Monday. That's it for us. Adios. Season almost here. Enjoy CCL.
Smooth extra. Smooth.